This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Ready to relax in your dream bath retreat without the stress of figuring out every detail yourself? At the Home Depot, your bath upgrade is covered. Shop fully designed rooms and curated bath collections to go from inspiration to transformation fast. Savings of up to 40% will make it easier on your budget. And find everything you need, from tubs to toilets and all the tile in between, to bring your vision to life. The Home Depot. Dream baths built here.
Welcome to the Hunt of Oar podcast, powered by Sportsman's Empire, where we celebrate the hunting and fishing lifestyle through the utilization and consumption of our wild game. No egos.
Fork in hand, beer in the other.
No status.
A piece of red meat on a hot grill and turn it into a burnt offering.
Just catch it, cut it, cook it.
This is episode 153, The Importance of Knowing Where Your Food Comes From, with Chef Adam Diltz. On this episode of Hunt of Oar, we touch on fundamental questions we all have. As people heavily involved with what's on our plate, where does my food come from? Nick is joined by Chef Adam Diltz, who sheds light on why knowing about his dishes is so important. Along with health and wellness, it brings an understanding of history and valuing the wholeness of what is presented on the plate. So come along on this chat on this episode of Hunt of Oar. Well, hey, folks, beautiful morning here in Michigan. I tell you what, the sun is up. It's already getting steamy. I'm still a hot coffee drinker, so we're going to stick with that. I'm not going with the cold brew yet. We're just sticking with the piping hot cup of Joe here. This morning, though, we've got a guest from the east side of the country. We're heading all the way out to Philly. We're going to be talking with Chef Adam Diltz this morning, owner and chef of Elwood Restaurant. Adam, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
I think through the podcast here, I think you've jumped on and engaged on Instagram and listened to a few episodes. And we've gone back and forth on some conversations. And I'm just glad to get on board with someone who is passionate about food like myself. Being in the restaurant business, being someone who literally, they wake up in the morning and you think about food, you deal with food, and you go to bed thinking about what's coming up tomorrow. Where did you get your start with that? When did food really become something that you're like, I am going to put my life's work behind it?
Well, I mean, interesting enough, I grew up in northeastern Pennsylvania, and the hunting culture is is huge up there. Well, it is in Michigan. It's probably the same.
And absolutely. It's part of the Orange Army, is like we like to say.
Oh, yeah. Michigan, actually, here's a quick aside. Michigan's beautiful. When I lived in Chicago, we would try to, back in the days when fine dining restaurants would be closed Sundays and Mondays, you didn't have to be open for brunch, you know. We used to take trips, my buddies, to go fishing over in Michigan. Beautiful place.
Oh,
like
no
the Muskegon
way.
Had an amazing time. Oh man, amazing time on the Muskegon River.
Yeah.
You know, not a lot. Like we didn't do it every week, obviously. You know what I mean? Because it's still a hike, but yeah, it was a beautiful spot. But yeah, anyways, I grew up in northeastern Pennsylvania, and the hunting culture is big. You know, you start hunting when you're 12 there, you know. But because of that, I like hunting, of course, but I like to eat it too. So I got into, cooking from eating, you know, looking up recipes of how to eat. I mean, everybody eats everything well done back home, you know. They still do, you know. It's it's a different world from, you know, Philly, the city. But, yeah, I mean, I got, like, my Elwood is my grandfather, was my grandfather's name. And that sort of inspiration, though, stems from the hunting culture also. You know, you out hunting when you're young, you shoot a rabbit, and then you would just roast it up. I mean, and that's what I do. That's one of my signature items, is a whole roasted rabbit at Elwood. So I always had it, you know. In high school, my favorite course, or whatever you call it, class, was lunch, you know. So I always liked to eat. And they had a farm, you know, my great grandparent. I mean, he grew up on a farm, Elwood, but I didn't. But they had a farm, and so it was always, you know, it was always in the culture, I guess you could say, is, you know, eating food, some of it, growing, you know. The great grandmother, she used to have this huge, well, it wasn't a huge room, but it was like her laundry room, where she would have, like, every time you went over, she'd have like three kinds of cakes, three kinds of pies, five different cookies, cream puffs, donut. I mean, everything, all the time, you know. And that was even when I was a kid. Like, well, that wasn't even when the height of when they were farming, you know, back when my mom was younger. But anyways, that's how I got into it, because I just like to eat. So
I think that even reflects, like you were just saying a minute ago, you'd shoot a rabbit, you'd go and you bring it home, maybe let it hang, but pull it and whole roast rabbit. You didn't have to guess what was on the plate. You saw the foreleg, you saw, you know, the spine, the bones. And with your restaurant, Elwood, just as I was going through the Instagram, just looking at photos, you keep the head on fish, and the pin bones and the spine and fins are right there. And so that's kind of what I wanted to talk a little bit today, was kind of that pulse on farm to table. I still run across people who are shy about the idea of eating something that was living, that if it resembles any sort of what it used to be, you know, a turkey sandwich, you know, you put up the skin on the turkey sandwich on there, it's beautiful. You see the grain in there, but at the same time, you also like, this is off of an animal. It's not the deli roll. You know, the deli roll hides it, and you can have a turkey thinking I'm having a sandwich. Yeah. But at the same time, presenting something that is whole in its essence, that whole farm to table, where we're going to eat every part of it. You're not just having the ribeye. You're not just having filet. You're having all the bits of it. What is that pulse, especially like in a town like Philadelphia? How are people responding to that?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's rough in general, I think, you know, and I mean, yeah, but I'm glad you, it's cool you say that, because one of the themes when I opened was how we used to eat and how we would rel. America in general, I want to say, has just moved so far away from, you know, where our food comes from. You know, like the like you're right. Like I say that all the time. Like people think that, you know, well, we've been saying for a long time. People think that like pork comes from the grocery store in a styrofoam. You know what I mean? And I think that, like, you know, when you lived on, if you lived on a farm, like, you know, your mom, like my mom or whatever, farm life, like you had a better view of the world. You know, there's certain things. Hey, that pig was cute. You know what I mean? And then it grew up and then we had to slaughter and sell it. I mean, that's just, that's life. You know, it's not good. It's not bad. It's life. I mean, that's life. And so, especially with industrialization, you know, we moved out of this, of what we used to know or take for granted, I guess, is that, like, we're raising these animals and we're eating these animals, that the respect is gone from the plate. You know what I mean? Like, that turkey was a living being. Are you going to respect that, you know, by, like you said, you know what I mean? Not just throwing the skin away or you know what I mean? I think we move far away from that. I mean, America, this is my opinion, but, you know, lots of other countries, most other countries in the world, you know, you don't, it's like an affluent thing where you wouldn't even dream of throwing the head of the fish away. You know what I mean? Like my wife's Chinese. I mean, they would never, that's unthinkable. You know what I mean? That's unthinkable. And that was the way that we used to eat too. Americans used to eat too. I mean, and we've moved further. I mean, even the slaughterhouse, well, I mean, obviously for sanitation reasons too. But there's this great book. It's called Modernity and the Rise of the Slaughterhouse, or Meat Modernity and the Rise of the Slaughterhouse. And he says how that in like France, when they started doing like slaughtering, you know, eventually Paris, they just moved them further and further outside of Paris, which is good for sanitation reasons. And but it happened in all the big cities. And then when refrigeration came, people wouldn't even, they didn't even call it fresh meat then. Like, can you imagine? Because they got it every single day. They went to the butcher, got their meat, and then they were like, once refrigeration came, like, wait, what? This isn't fresh. How long has this been in the fridge? Like, can you imagine? It's crazy stuff, but it's interesting how that sort of, you should check that book out, but it's interesting how that sort of, the culture just changes. And I think it, and it's hard. I mean, Philly is a big, you know, East Coast progressive city. So there's a lot more vegans here, I'm sure, than there is in Michigan. You know what I mean? So, I mean, it's hard at times. And lots of people, you know, like, whoa, I don't like the fish looking at me, you know. But, I mean, other people, they have that cheek, you know, and it's the best part, best meat on that head, on that fish. So, I mean, it's tough sometimes. But like I said, there's lots of, but one of the things is Philly is a big multicultural city with people from all over the world who are used to that sort of thing, you know, whole fish, frying whole fish, you know. Oh, I love a little fried fish, like a Vietnamese or like the Southeast Asian fried fish. Oh, so good.
Absolutely. And like, just like you were just saying too, like cultures outside of ourselves, again, they were living that day to day subsistence farming, having, you know, a flock of chickens or having the availability to go and catch a few fish. And that's going to be the week. That's what you're going to have. And you don't want any of that to go to waste. And I think I just, in my local area too, the rise of the cuts that normally weren't sought after are now become those hidden gems because the almighty dollar is not stacking up the way it used to. You know, when the ribeye and the loin is getting super expensive, you know, people are looking around at, well, what are some other cuts? Like we start hearing about, oh shoot, what's the flat iron off beef. off the shoulder blade, or even an oyster steak, again, off the pelvis bone there, where butcher shops are finding a way to make it creative. But at the same time, it's like, how can we stretch that out a little bit further? And the closer you get to the slaughter of that animal, the closer you get to that whole aspect of animal, you buy in bone-in stuff. Well, shoot, you got a base for stock mm-hmm. right there. How many people in modern America, I know of several hunters on my own, and I try to do the same thing. You know, when I'm done with my turkey bones, I'm making a bunch of stock. When I'm, you know, when I get with my deer bones,
oh, yeah.
we're putting that in the big pot, and it's going to boil over for, you know, overnight just to get that sucker the way it was. You filter it out. I'd like to say it lasts long, but it's like, shoot, you go to the grocery store and you get one of those salt laden stocks on a shelf, you know, whether it's beef stock, chicken stock, or whatever it is, like that stuff goes fast. And shoot, you make your own pot of stuff. It's got flavor. It's, you know, a lot of aromatics to it. And boom, I was doing it where I would actually take that. That was what I was doing for lunch. I would do, I was like a pint of it for lunch, but it was like, I can't make this stuff fast enough. I got to kill more animals just to keep the bones coming to keep making more stock.
Exactly. Especially if you reduce it down, you know, make an old school red wine sauce, you know, an old school sauce. But yeah, I know. This is what I do at home. Okay. I'm going to preface, but
This isn't at the restaurant.
This is at home for myself. But what I do, I take that bloodshot, you know, shoulder. I throw it in the stock, the bones. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Obviously, if it's, you know, blood clots, I don't. But like the rib where you would throw that away, I mean, I just throw that in there. I mean, it doesn't hurt anything. It just adds more flavor, you know? Right. It's good. I honestly don't throw it away. You know what I mean? So I use that too in the stock, and for a big stock, you know, on venison and stuff.
Excellent. Excellent. Kind of like, you know, shifting back again, I want to come back to that Elwood, the restaurant mm-hmm. feel. It's not only a restaurant. Am I looking at that? Like you go out of lengths or out of your, comfort zone of day to day to now teach others what to do.
Sure.
I watched one where you were showing a class, whether it was a culinary class or just people that signed up for it. But you were taking apart a whole salmon and just how engaged they were in the process of, you know, getting those fillets off.
Yeah, that was, I'm on the board of, it's a national foundation, but there's one here in Philly. It's called CCAP, I mean, Careers for Culinary Students. And it raises, the whole point of it is to raise, money for scholarships so that kids that are in high school, they're going for high school, like technical, like the culinary, that they can go to culinary school. So they give out, it's a great program. We give out, you know, they have a test and stuff. It's not automatic, but there's testing and that they do. And then they can get scholarships to go to culinary school. So it's a great program. It's a national program, but the one in Philly is the one I'm part of. And in that particular one, yeah, we do this like job training thing during the summer every year. And it's a week long thing where they do, they learn resume writing. They learn, you know, basic job skills that, I mean, you know, show up on time, you know, what's the right time to show up. You know, the basic stuff, which, you know, is losing it more and more as we go along, but but it's the basic stuff. And then also, like, they get a class where fish butchery and chicken butchery, which is amazing, you know, because you're never going to have a time when you can just sit there and totally destroy you have to practice, you know what I mean? You have to practice.
Oh, absolutely.
But practicing, you're not going to be perfect. You're going to screw stuff up. So you never will ever get that. You know what I mean? Outside of that, like there's not going to be, I mean, you're not coming to my restaurant and screwing up 10 fish that I'm paying for, and then I got to serve, right? that's not going to happen, you know? So it's an amazing thing. It's an amazing thing. And in that particular class, we got salmon. Yeah, it was donated salmon. So they got to see salmon butchery, yeah. And we roasted up the heads. I made them roast up the heads and try the cheek too, you know. So
yeah, I'm gonna circle back around. We're gonna talk a little bit about that head. We're gonna talk about that cheek. But yeah, like you said, like when there's a teaching aspect, and I follow this. I got a couple buddies who they bring their deer to me. And some of them have been like, here's some money and, you know, just cut my deer up. I want steaks and I want ground. Yeah. And then I got a couple others that are, you know what, show me what you're doing here. And then that hesitancy with the knife, like they get into now wanting to, I'm like, stick it right in here. It's going to go to the joint. They miss the joint and they're like, oh shoot. Is it ruined?
Yeah.
Can we not use this? And like the thing I keep telling them is like, you know, if this one doesn't look, you know, like you want to take a picture of it, it's not a big deal.
Exactly.
The worst of the worst, you're going to get ground burger. And isn't that stuff awesome? Like, you can't screw it up. Now, like on a fish again, like you want the big fillet, but at the same time, you cut one, you know, in the wrong place, or you got to pin out a little bit of extra bone there. You know, you're making more product for patties there at that point. You're going to have more product for fish patties, which everybody loves. You deep fry those, and those things are awesome. But yeah, there's that learning curve. There's going to be that, well, I got to get used to the knife. I got to get used to handling the fish. I got to get used to handling stuff. And then after a while, like, bam, now things, it's clockwork. Riding a bike at that point as well.
I mean, I say there's no wrong way to butcher as long as you're using it. You know what I mean? Like, there's no wrong way to break down a pig. It's whatever, however you're going to use the end product. I mean, if you're throwing it away, yeah, that's the wrong way to do it. But, I mean, there's so many different ways. There's so many, like, deer. Like, there's no wrong way unless you're throwing out, unless you're not eating half of it or you're not eating even
right,
a quarter of it.
Right, unless the whole rib section's going into the dumpster.
Yeah, exactly. Unless you're just, you know, good old boy style, like back in the day, you just take that back strap and then everything else. You know, that would be the bad way, but I mean, but like, yeah, like you said, if you screw it up, I mean, who cares? I mean, you can just do whatever. You can grind it or you can still use it.
Absolutely. Let's jump into the discussion of that fish. So okay. I've got listeners that they've been calling, they've been crying, they want the fish episode. And so I'm like, beautiful. I got a guy out of Philly who deals. Now I should ask, you're pulling a lot of your stuff saltwater. We're getting out of these out of the Atlantic, or is there still a bunch of freshwater that you're pulling out or putting in your restaurant? Where do you seem to lean heavy on, freshwater or saltwater fish?
Well, see, I do. Well, that just comes to the style or what is the end way you're serving the fish. Okay. And in this case, I do like this. So my Dutch, restaurant, we focus on like Pennsylvania Dutch, which is, I grew up eating, you know, pork and sauerkraut. My family made scrapple, shoe fly, that sort of thing. So I lean towards this. And when my entrees are like family style for like two to three people. So you're getting a whole fish. So in general, most of for that aspect of it, you know, it's mostly from like, you know, bigger ocean, like 3-pound striped bass or snapper. For instance, that sort of thing. You know what I mean? And then other times I do, like I do, Greenwalk Trout Hatchery and so like an hour or two away from Philadelphia, they do trout. When the beautiful walleye from Lake Erie are in, I get some walleye, gorgeous stuff, you know. But, yeah, like that. for the family style entree, though, it'd be like a bigger fish. Like, I could do a trout for, I mean, people, lots of people do whole trout, but not for, it's not quite big enough for two people, you know what I mean? So,
dry aged steaks used to be a steakhouse only indulgence. An old world charcuterie was pricey due to being imported or created at a small batch specific scale. Thanks to Umai Dry, their synthetic dry aging bags and cases allow you to create these meat crafting treats in your own kitchen. Working in tandem with your fridge, the Umai Dry bag material allows moisture and air to pass through, making it possible to dry age large cuts of steaks or roasts. Paired with their curing and seasoning kits, along with safe and easy to follow instructions, salamis and dry sausage are well within your grasp. Use the link in the show notes and sign up for the newsletter to receive 10% off your order. Umai Dry, helping us elevate our wild game from the home kitchen.
Right. I'm close to Lake Michigan too. They're on the same big lake that you were fishing out of. And I've been on a couple charters where, yeah, you pay the guys to have your fishing license and to take you out, and you use their intel, and basically you're just the real guy. You just sit there and just pull on the reel and drink beer. But we pull out some beautiful fish out of that big lake. We're king salmon, lake trout, steelhead. They're all stocked in there. There is a wild run of steelhead and rainbow trout still, but those go to the big lake, and then, you know, they work their way up into the rivers as well. Another buddy of mine, he's a big fly fisherman, and so loves to just try and get those things on a fly. But this end of the day, like, it comes to me, I'm like, you know what? The fight is fun, but what are we coming home with? Where are we going to do something with these fish? And I've had a chance to play with a few of these fish. I've got either the big fillets, the charter guys, they do a great job of just taking that and then, you know, taking the fillets off for you, and then send them home with you. I've got a chance to bring home, you know, fish that I've caught. You know, I've tried the smack it on the head, bleed out the gill, and then get it as cold as possible. I mean, we were running through the wintertime, so it was like, shoot, the water temp kept that sucker nice and cold.
Nice.
But now I have one of these big fish, and it's like, I want to use as much as possible. I know the fillet's there, I know the belly's there and the potential there, but like, when we get closer to the head of that fish, we're looking at the head and we're looking at the collar. What are some parts? We mentioned the cheek earlier, but what are ways that I can now take that piece and use it to utmost value?
Oh, sure. With the head, you mean? Or just in general?
Yeah. Yeah, the head, the collar, everything kind of like up by that gill area that, you know, gets chopped off. Yeah. And then in a lot of cases, because you're fast, it just gets flipped off. I don't want to flip it off. I want it to stay here. I want to
Yeah,
it.
Yeah. Well, that collar, if you do, especially if it's a bigger fish, I mean, that's a classic delicacy, you know, Japan, you know what I mean? Hamachi collar would be, oh, so good. You know what I mean? I mean,
is that like a slow cook, or is it more of like a hot fast and then you pick?
That'll be like a hot fast. Sometimes fried, but so good. Yeah. I mean, you would just take, well, it's a bigger collar. I mean, I never done it with a salmon collar, I guess, but I mean, I guess you could, but, for sure you could. It'd just be smaller. I mean, you just sear that in a pan. Mm-hmm. And then if you wanted to, you know, drizzle it with olive oil or let a little jalapeno or even, you know, soy sauce if you're so, and cilantro, you know, something like that. And then the head, I mean, the classic way is, in the restaurants, the Mexican guys will be, you butcher some salmon and then they make this little salmon head soup with just like salmon, cilantro, sometimes, so good. so good. I mean, a fish head soup, but like we said earlier, and you were touching on, is that every culture already knows this stuff. You know what I mean? But like a salmon head or a soup made with that, even if you don't have to leave it whole. I mean, you could just Like, if you're making a chicken soup, grandma style, you boil, you simmer that chicken,
right.
You pick the meat, you make your soup. So you could do the same thing. I mean, there's so much meat left over. You cook those, simmer those heads, pick all the meat off of it, and then you could make a fish soup like that, and it's so good. I mean, lots of people, you know, they're weird, especially rural. Well, my growing up, you know, it's weird about, like, fish soups, fish heads, but it's so good.
Yeah. No, I like how you simplified that. Like, yeah, you don't have to just make the final dish with the head in there, but like you said, boil that out, pick the meat. At that point, it doesn't look like the head. It takes the intimidation.
Yeah, I mean, if your daughter or whatever is like, oh, no, or somebody you don't, your buddy, you don't have to just throw a fish head looking at them out of the soup. I mean, pick that meat. Pick the meat out of it after you do it. And you could throw the collar in there and do the same thing. But, I mean, I would try to, like, I mean, you could either just throw a collar in the oven, too. You could throw the whole heads in the oven, drizzle them with whatever your preferred style, and then pick the meat, too. There's so many meat. I mean, there's such good meat there on that back of that head, and the cheeks are always a delicacy. I mean, the eyes are good too. Let me tell you another trick we do in the restaurant world is that, so you're butchering, so let's say you get like lots of salmon in, you got salmon on the menu, okay? You're doing the seared salmon fillets, right? Filleting that salmon, that's my phone here, let me see. Filleting that salmon, and you would take a spoon. I don't know if it's in that video. I told the kids that. I don't know if it's in that little.
Yeah, take the spoon, right along the spine, and you right get along those thin bones.
You clean that up a little bit if you have to. You chop it up, and then you got salmon tartare. You sell that for, you know, another extra $10. You know, you got salmon tartare.
Yeah, there's your side dish right
exactly.
There.
It's a little appetizer that you make more money on, you know. So that's another trick we do in the restaurant industry. You know, we add that. We make little.
I like that. I got a little rambunctious with the belly on one of the steelhead that I kept, and I kind of ended up with like the tartar and like the ground already there, and I just being in the Midwest, I just did a little mayo mix up, had it, you know, a little bit of breadcrumb and added that together, and shoot, man, that was just, you know, quick deep fried, and I had myself a quick little snack there of a fish patty, but it was. I felt really, by doing that again, yeah, there's the crown piece of that fish being the fillet, but at the same time, like, I didn't let the belly go. I didn't let those pieces mm-hmm. go. Utilizing every little bit doesn't have to be like super hard and complicated. That was just a simple matter of me, you know, putting a little bit of mayo binding and getting that into a deep fryer. And same thing what you're saying with the tartare. Shoot, you're not even cooking it at that point. You're just giving it that vinegar and citrus bath. Mm-hmm. Mix that up, and boom, you got yourself a little side dish there.
Yeah, put it in a ring mold. Put it in a ring mold with some cucumbers and some cilantro and jalapenos, and you got yourself a $15 appetizer. You know what I mean? But here's another thing, like you said. I mean, if you just take that initial – whatever your waste is that you think, you take or in general, you can say this, like we said with the fish head soup, you just simmer that if you want, or you can just cook it in the oven. You pick all the meat, and then you know, fish cakes. You can just, like you just made, save all that meat and make fish cakes. Or you could even cryovac and put it in the freezer, save it for another day. Then you can just pop it out, mix your mayonnaise, breadcrumbs, and have some fish cakes.
Yeah. That waste not, want not mentality. I got that from my grandfather. And so when I hear that the restaurant business is doing the same thing, like, that does get me excited.
It's all that money. I mean, people think that the French chefs were there because you had to have a perfect boudoir and a perfect little, you know, your knife cuts had to be perfectly, you know, cubed, this tiny little 1/8 inch. But I mean, they think that, because of that, there's lots of waste. But in reality, there wasn't much. I mean, there wasn't really much waste. I mean, they'd use it for something. Like, if you're dicing, maybe those carrots, I mean, they're going in the stock, the ones that don't make it to the diner. And other Absolutely. Things, you're tourneying a turnip. I mean, you're making a turnip puree with the, you know, the scraps or something. I mean, you'd always use all that stuff because it's money. I mean, it's money at the end.
Yes. Absolutely. Kind of switching gears, red meat out of your restaurant. I see like you're in Fishtownburg of Philadelphia. Red meat, are you seeing where...
Oh, wait, hang on one second.
Where quantity is going down? Oh, yeah.
Fishtown, I didn't mention this. I don't know why I should have, but so I don't forget. Fishtown is from the shad industry that used to be here in this area of Philadelphia. So the shad would run up. I do shad every year. I didn't say that. When it's the season.
Oh, okay.
Beautiful fish, and I do it like on cedar planks like they used to. But anyways, yeah. I just want to mention that because I forgot.
Look, yeah, and now I want to dive in because I'm excited okay. about this. What river are they coming up in? I didn't look at Philadelphia to see it, but like you said, they're running up.
Well,
there's a season on shad. They're coming
it's
off.
Tough because, I mean, okay. my seafood purveyor, you know, my big seafood purveyor, I mean, I can see in 10 years, no, I'm not even getting them anymore because there's no... See, shad is the biggest fish in the herring family. I actually have a... On YouTube, at a restaurant, I do a shad, American shad video on this fish. Okay. But... So it's a oily fish, but it's not oily like a sardine or a mackerel, you know, but it's such a good fish. But there's so many bones. There's like three lines of bones on each side. It's a crazy fish. So many bones. So it sort of fell out of favor. Now they start running
okay.
in the spring. It seems like it gets earlier every year, starting down in down south. And as a water temps rise, they start coming up all the way up through, you know, here it's the Delaware. They'll run up the Delaware. And so I get my seafood purveyor gets them, but they not necessarily just from the Delaware though, from like the Bay, Chesapeake and stuff. So, but they run, the season goes up until like the Connecticut River, like all the way up. So, but yeah, it was a long history of this fish. I mean, that fish fed the Native Americans for, you know, thousands and thousands of years before Europeans came.
Before we even showed up, yeah.
Exactly. And they lived on that, and they waited for that after winter, you know. That was something to look forward to every spring, you know, one of the first things to look forward to. And then, and even then the sturgeon too. I mean, there's so many, but the, you know, industry in Delaware is, you know, I mean, even growing up, I grew up next to the Susquehanna River and, it's so, we never ate anything from there. It's just so polluted, you know?
Mm, yeah. But as far as that Fishtown was like, the shad was its flag star ship, the flag star fish. This is what the town was based on. You said it was an oily fish. You said it was a bony fish, but yet here it is, this delicacy.
And
what
shad
are you
row.
Doing with like this? Yeah, and shad roe and the inside of it. So you're frying up the shad or the roe. You're serving this family style. Are you picking it as well?
I'm like, serving it family style.
A shad dish, a classic shad.
The Native Americans would take it and use planks, you know, wooden planks and planked sand, you know, I mean, Northwestern, you know what I'm trying to say. They're known for the sand, you know,
yeah.
And Applebee's in the 90s was doing the cedar plank salmon, right? But
absolutely, yeah.
So they're known for that, like the Northwestern region, like Washington, you know, they're known for that. But lots of people did that, stuff like that. I mean, lots of Native peoples did that. And so, and around here, they would do it too, on like cedar too, also the Eastern cedar. And so I have these cedar planks that I do it. I mean, I used to serve it whole. See, here's one thing where I used to do, but it just doesn't sell as much. You know, so you gotta find that medium. But I'll fillet it now, put the fillets on a cedar plank. Now, when the colonists arrived and they started doing it, they would like nail bacon on it. But they would put, it like this. Oh, okay. Like here's the board. So here's the board, and then nail that shad over, and here's your fire. And so it would cook it like that. And then the colonists would put like bacon over it. And so I serve it with a little bacon. But so I do it in an oven, though. I don't have a grill. But I do it on little cedar planks, just like so it gets that same flavor. But it's a cool fish. I mean, yeah. I think it tastes like crab almost, especially when you dip it in butter. I mean, it can be a tedious fish to eat, but it's actually, speaking of crab, I mean, it's no more work than, you know, crab dinner, crab feast, you know, cracking crabs,
yeah.
Blue crabs.
Now, this would be something like, I haven't been dating in a long time. I've got my wife. I know I'm supposed to be continually dating her as we go on with this marriage. But like you said, it's like a tedious fish. Like, I feel like that's a perfect date night meal.
Yeah, I think so,
it's too. Tedious. It's tedious. You're going to be there a yeah. while. And, you know, I want to see if my girl can get in there with those fingers. Like, get that piece of meat out. Like, that's a keeper right there. Yeah. You know, and I...
My wife says she... Actually, speaking of, my wife says she was doing that to me when I... Because, like I said, she's Chinese. And so, on our first date, I was like, oh, you speak Chinese? We got to go to Chinatown. Because they always gave me the, you know... Like before that, I would go there and I'd get one of those salt and pepper shrimps, and they'd be like the battered head off, no head.
Yeah.
And then I go, no, I got to get the good ones. And so we went there and I got the good ones. And then she ordered this whole fish too. She said she was testing me to see if I was going to like, ew.
Yeah. What were your reaction was going to be? Yeah. Yes.
But I passed, so
I loved it. So you passed. Yeah, yeah. I was gonna say you passed. Excellent job. You're a keeper. Good work.
Exactly.
Good work.
Exactly.
Oh man, get back on that the train that I was thinking of is, you know, I know you're very fish heavy in that area. But then when we get into red meat as well, and this is kind of where I think I find myself, this balance of quantity versus quality. I know the big 96er sirloin steak is a cool commodity to be able to do. I think it depends on what steakhouse you go to. But the same idea, like that whole idea of huge portions of red meat, I think there's kind of been this transition to up in the quality, but yet the quantity is going to be a little bit smaller. I know for my family, we have switched. We still get beef as a treat, but we're really kind of honing in on venison. And I'm finding like each one of those cuts that I'm getting off of it. Yeah. It's pared down. I mean, the size of the animal, but at the same time, like the quality that I'm getting off of that piece of meat is just through the roof. In the restaurant world, are you seeing that same trend where quantity is going down but quality is going up? Are people looking for the Wagyu, the prime, or is it still one of those, hey, I'm cool with any sort of sirloin steak?
I think well, I think it's complicated. I think that it was for sure definitely pushing that trend. Everybody like me, you know, we all were pushing that. And COVID hit, you know, and just the prices are so, you know, everything's so much more expensive. And so I think now it's sort of, I mean, you know, a grass-fed ribeye, for instance, is smaller than, you know, a typical grain-finished, you know, industrial ribeye. So I mean, there's a big difference, you know. And I would say, I mean, now of course there's people that do they do want that, and they do like the Wagyu. There's a big push in, I don't know what's going on now, but there's like a big Wagyu push in the East Coast. Yeah. Now, are you seeing it? Yeah. And then it's, I assume they got money.
Or even like the, yeah, you can buy them, you get Wagyu burgers. And I'm at that point, I'm kind of like, wait, what? We're cutting up the Wagyu into little bits. Maybe that was the guys that were learning.
You can get Wagyu burger at Costco. Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I think there's some people that do, but I mean, I think it's harder. It's a lot harder. To be honest, it's a lot harder to do grass-fed beef. I mean, it's just so much more expensive. Mm-hmm. And even getting, I mean, I used to get, back home, we used to get, I guess I did it after COVID. But the farm that I was buying, I mean, they closed, sort of. But I was getting a half a cow, you know, from a farmer.
Yeah.
And it's more expensive, you know. I mean, you got to sell all those parts. Mm-hmm. Even though you're getting it, you know, $5 a pound, say, you still get that ribeye for $5 a pound, but you got to sell every single other thing. And the things you don't mm-hmm. sell, I mean, the fat, you know, it goes up. That price goes up, $8 a pound. You know what I mean? So it's tough. It really is tough. It's... I mean, meat is a luxury, you know? I mean, especially beef, like you say, you don't do that. I mean, if you got a freezer full of venison, though, why would you buy? I mean, I don't know why you would buy beef. You don't need to. But,
No, I don't need to, but, like, my wife is a big steak eater, so it's one of those things, like, if it's an occasion, like, we go get the choice, but at the same time, it's like, well, hey, I can make steak just as well as any beef, shoot, better, because I get to handle it. I acquired it, I did it, and that is, you know, I appreciate that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's tough sometimes, for sure. I mean, I think with, like, you know, how expensive stuff is, you know, it gets, I mean, and to talk about your first point of you were originally saying about how people looking for different cuts. I mean, there was a time when, well, no, it still is most of the time where flank steak, skirt steak, they're more expensive than ribeye, you know, with the carne asada trends and the, that style of really, really took off, and it drove that skirt steak and flank steak insane prices. If you can even get it sometimes, you know? So it was more expensive. Sometimes it still is more expensive than ribeye now.
Yeah. Having your wife be of Chinese descent, how much oxtail goes through your house? Do you get to enjoy
she loves oxtail
soup? Because I was saying, that's the buzzer
Here's
picking
the thing.
Right there.
Here's
I
the thing,
love
though.
This oxtail.
Oxtail is the most expensive thing. At the grocery store.
Oh, my goodness.
At Costco, even at the Asian supermarkets, it's expensive. It's crazy how expensive it is. Like, but
yeah,
because they know that that's their prime piece. that's the prime cut. But yeah, she loves oxtail.
Oh, and it's one of those things like five, 10 years ago. I picked up a quarter beef, and they had oxtail sitting right there. They had the heart sitting there. Yep. I wasn't ready for the liver yet. I wasn't ready, but I was like, what's happening with the oxtail and the heart? And they were like, shoot, they just threw it in a bag and I threw it in the back. I mean, I scored big. I thought I was high on the hog with that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. But I manned up and got after liver too. So anytime I get a chance for offal, man, I'm on it.
Oh yeah. Heart's my favorite part of the animal. I always liked the heart. We used to pickle them too.
Well, why don't we leave? Yeah. Why don't we leave with that? You need to lay out, give me your ideal, not the restaurant, but I want your ideal heart dish. What are you doing with either a beef heart, lamb heart, whatever you got in front of you?
Sure. Venison heart, we'll say. Let's say.
Yeah, we can do venison.
Yeah. Well, you trim it up. I would, I mean, this is what I do. Super simple. You trim it up. I would cut it. I cut it into like pieces like that big, I would say, if you can get it to that big, and then it'll be about a quarter inch thick, you know, Trim it up. Yeah. You marinate it, a little oil, thyme, whatever herbs you got. And then grill. Hit it on the charcoal grill. Oh, so good. So amazingly good. Mid-rare, you just, you know, two sides, you char
just,
it up.
Yeah, just
and if you don't
want to
grill, I mean, hit it in a cast iron. Oh, it's so, oh, man, it's so good. I love it.
I think, yeah, it's, I would say for offal, that's your gateway because it's got such a meat texture to it. I mean, it is. It's a muscle. It's a working muscle. But it's like, that's that gateway into like, hey, I enjoyed heart. Why was I scared of it before?
Yeah, yeah. All my family gives me their hearts too.
Yes, we do. We do tacos. So very similar to what you've done. I hit it with a spicy marinade. Yeah. Because the marinade works because it's such a thin muscle.
Yeah.
At that point. You've taken off the membranes on the outside. Shoot. Yeah. For our deer camp, for archery season, I get all the hearts. I store them up. I clean them up. You get them in the marinade. And by the time we get to gun season, deer camp, we have a night where we just get everybody together. It's literally a griddle, you know, a Blackstone. Oh, and I am just holding those suckers down, darken them up, slice them against the grain. And it's just filling tortillas and passing them out.
That's great.
That's our tradition.
Yeah,
there.
That's great. That's a,
well, Adam, this has been a great talk. I appreciate the time. Where can my listeners find more about you? How can they follow along with you online? And how can they find information about Elwood?
Sure. ElwoodRestaurant.com, my website. I also, if you're on Instagram, it's Elwood Restaurant or Chef Adam Diltz. That's me. I do have a YouTube video. I mean, I don't really... I have no interest in being a YouTube or social media star chef, you know what I mean? But, I mean, I do have a YouTube. Sometimes I don't do much anymore. I mostly did it in COVID because I had nothing to do, you know what I mean? But it's Elwood Restaurant. Well, I do have a shad, like I said, shad. I do it a venison. Actually, I did a venison shank video over the winter. Yeah, oh, I love venison shank. So good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And
well, good. I know you didn't want to be a big star, but hey, for the people in this niche of the world, they are looking forward to getting
thanks.
Yep. Hold on just a second, Adam, and I'm going to let our listeners on out. Folks, I hope you enjoyed this past hour. Man, I feel like we just went left and right, but we found our way all the way upstream. We were talking fish, we were talking big salmonoids all the way down to the loved shad out of Philly. And I hope that maybe you can take some of this stuff that we talked about, collars and heads, and apply that into what you are making. Shoot, you put all the effort into getting on that fish, getting the fish into the boat. Let's use every bit of that delicious flesh that it has so graciously offered up to us. So folks, whether it's going to be trying to pick the meat off of one of those shads, or if you're going to be filleting out one of those big old salmonoids, make sure the knife you are using is very sharp.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.